This is the Pitch Fishing Academy Cricket Show number 104. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Fishing Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchfishing.com. You can email us on
mycricketcoach@pitchfishing.com.
And you can call us on
020-88-167-691.
My name's David Hinchliffe.
And I'm Berners.
Welcome to episode 104, and it's another packed show for you this week. We've got Berners on the line again. How's it going, Berners?
It's all good here, thanks, in Camp MySport.
And also coming up on the show, we've got Gary Palmer giving us some more batting tips and keeping all you batsmen happy on how to score lots of runs without getting out. So, Berners, we had a new toy at training on Sunday. Our coach decided to invest in one of those SS Skya bats, the one with the rubber face on. Have you seen those?
Indeed. A coach's dream, a player's nightmare.
Well, of course, we were indoors, so I took the opportunity to grab him and said, come on, let's test it out. Let's see what you can do. And I did some keeping practice with it. So he stood about 15 yards away and smashed some balls at me as hard as he could. Well, maybe not as hard as he could, but pretty hard. And they were, it was good fun throwing myself around, getting behind those and practicing my standing back practice.
Sure.
What's it like? Have you ever used them outdoors when they smash it up in the air? What's it like having to take steepling catches with one of those?
I've taken a couple off of the old Skya. I saw Kevin Peterson hit a ball over the media centre at Lord's with one of those Skyas from the square, which is quite a hefty hit. So they definitely do a bit of damage.
Mm.
I always pretend the sun's in my eyes or it's not my go and just kind of stand there still and watch the grass grow whilst others kind of get in a tiz trying to catch the ball and break fingers and stuff.
With your arms out looking left and right as if to say, it's not me. Who is it?
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Not me.
Yeah. What's that? There's a ball in the air. No, can't be.
It's quite good for standing back practice. Of course, we launched this week a course, an online coaching course with videos and worksheets with Adrian Shaw, who used to keep wicket for Glamorgan. And Adrian was doing some drills with the Skya bat as part of that course. And you can see those if you go to pitchvision.com/academy. You can get all the details of how to find out about those drills. And it was good to get his point of view on when to use it and when not to use it and what it's best for and what it's not good for. He also talked about the catchits, the orange sloped bits of plastic which you see everybody using nowadays for catching practice. He also showed when was the best time to use those and when's the not so good time to use those. So it's a bit like anything with cricket, isn't it? There's lots of ideas come out and it's really only the best ones that are used properly, because a lot of people just think that they can use a toy or a gadget to fix their problems, when actually what it's about is good coaching and good practice, and then using the right bit of kit to complement that and not try and replace it.
Exactly. It's what we try to do with the Pitch Fishing product, of course, is bring a new dynamic tool into the coaching environment so guys can work alongside us.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you're never going to be able to replace a coach. Why would you even try? If it complements the coach, whatever the product is, whether it be a high-tech thing like Pitch Vision or a low-tech thing like a triangle of plastic like the catcher is, what it's got to do is complement what the coach does and not try and replace him, because as soon as you do that, it's all going to go a bit Pete Tong, isn't it?
Absolutely, coach.
So what else is going on in the world of Pitch Vision then, Berners? Are we doing anything around the World Cup?
Yeah, it's all going off in India at the moment. Bangalore, I believe. They've got the Castrol Lab, which is kind of hospitality meets cricket technology. Mm-hmm. Castrol being one of the major sponsors at the event have embedded the Pitch Vision systems in their offering to the masses, so that's really good.
And we're doing a Cricket World Cup ourselves.
We are. We're going to follow suit with the real stuff on the television at the moment and actually have an interactive World Cup between different countries. So We've just gone live in New Zealand. We've got systems over in the West Indies, South Africa, North America, Ireland, Pakistan and India. And also here domestically in the UK, we're going to have a system running, and I believe that's on April the 3rd. So that's going to be really fun. So get on the website and have a little look at some of the interactive data that we're collecting. It's going to be based around speed and number of deliveries, and we're going to get a load of performance criteria on there and be able to have an eventual winner. So, yeah, that's really exciting for us as well.
It's a sort of mass use of pitch vision, isn't it, all at once, and gathering all the data and watching the results come in live. It should be quite exciting when that happens.
Yeah, it's certainly a world's first to have something like that, very unique, to have it across the internet as well, using that as a portal for people to analyse varying bits of data coming in from around the world. So, yeah, start placing your bets. My money's on the West Indies and our good friend Dwayne Lau, but I'll leave it to the results to tell the true story.
And you can find out more about that if you go to pitchvision.com/World Cup. In this next portion of the show, we're going to be talking to Gary Palmer. Gary's CCM Academy is world renowned for producing high quality cricketers with excellent techniques. And Gary is also the batting coach of Pitch Vision Academy, our online coaching academy. Now, a lot of players who maybe haven't had a lot of formal coaching can find themselves falling into technical errors, but they've got good enough hand-eye coordination, say in the nets against the bowling machine, to get away with it a little bit. So they may be hitting the ball quite sweetly, but perhaps their alignment isn't quite right, for example, or they're not completing the shot correctly. What would you say to someone who you were coaching in the nets and you saw them not achieving the level of perfection, but they're still hitting the ball quite well when they're getting the half volleys fed from the bowling machine?
I would want to try and coach them into perfection with the ABCs in practice. And if they said to me, that's the way I play and I've been successful, you know, if that's a club cricketer or a young lad who's only played under 15 cricket, he hasn't got the experience or the knowledge to know that to play at the higher level, second team, first team or international level, those flaws will be totally magnified, and a bowler can exploit them to the point where that player will have a low trot of form and could well get dropped out of the team. So I think as a coach, if you see little cracks emerging, you need to sort of nip them in the bud straight away. And one of the key things is, as a coach, you need to know what perfection looks like in your head. So you've got this shot in your head, i.e. the straight drive, you've got a perfect shape of it. If you know what that shape is and you set your standards high, then you can coach people to improve their body position to match what you've got in your head. But if you haven't got perfection in your head, then you're not going to help the player achieve the perfect shot. And I think in grooving and against a bowling machine, you've got to try and work on making your technique as perfect as you possibly can. Because the better the technique, the easier it is to deliver a wide variety of game plans, the easier it is to survive magic deliveries early on in an innings. So, and it just happens, a lot of the best players in the world do have good techniques. They're pretty good at the ABCs. The law of averages says if you've got an average technique, you know, unfortunately, you're going to have lulls in your form where things aren't going to work. But as a player, you've got to be on top of your technique all the time. Even if you're playing really well, just assess yourself, have a look at your drives and think, yeah, is that bang on? Is it perfect? Or are there little cracks appearing? Because if those cracks start appearing, they just get wider and wider and wider. Then suddenly you just have a bad run of form for a while. So you've always got to monitor it. You must never neglect your technique. Otherwise, your poor performances will start to neglect you. I also believe when you're coaching somebody in the net that I would call it programming. I think you ought to give them a bit of a running commentary when you first start working with somebody on, you know, what they're doing wrong and how they can correct it. So if this is an ongoing process in an hour or 2 hour net session, the more you identify faults for the player, the more the player will understand what those faults are themselves. They'll identify them themselves. When you correct them, that player will know themselves how to correct their own faults. And you're literally programming that player to be self-sufficient and, you know, fine-tune and construct and manage their own techniques. And then once you think they're doing that really well, then I think then you can start questioning them. It's like a spelling test, isn't it? You go away and learn the words, and then somebody comes back and quizzes you on it. You have to start thinking about it a little bit more. So you have to give the player the input first, and then when you think they've taken it on board, and they know how to play all their various shots, and they know all the correct techniques, then I think at that time you need to start questioning them a lot more, just to make sure they're understanding it and to get them thinking about it a little bit more. And I think it will help cement it in their head more firmly if you do the questioning bit. But you must put the info in their heads first. I mean, there's a lot of coaches I see out there now are sort of asking a lot of questions. That's all well and good if you've already gone through the process of loading that player's brain with all the right ways of playing all the shots. But if you haven't done that, then it's a guessing game. The player doesn't know what perfection is. The coach doesn't know what perfection is. And you just keep going around in circles. I mean, the most coaches, all coaches ought to be teaching exactly the same techniques for the front and back foot drives in the V and four defences as well. Those are your sort of bog standard basic shots that we all need to do the same way, i.e. the most efficient way technically. We've got to really try and create robots of best technique of the basics. And once that's been done, then the player then has a good foundation to then go away and tack onto those basics, their own little shots. You know, and they'll go and deliver their different types of game plans. We're all slightly different, but we all must have those basic shots in place before we do this. And I think, you know, when you're coaching with the running commentary, it helps a player to understand what perfection is, feel it, and reproduce it. And it's a quick way of developing someone's skill level.
It's interesting that you use the word robots there, because the word robotic has quite a lot of negative connotations. When they talk about a batsman being out of form, they say his technique is very robotic. He's doing things wrong. You know, he can't hit the ball off the square because he doesn't know how to innovate. Things like that. What do you say to someone who says when it comes to batting, robotic is a bad thing?
Well, what is robotic? From what you've just said there, it sounds like you're mixing up the word, or they're mixing up the word robotic with actually poor technique. If you give someone the most efficient way of swinging the bat, hitting the ball, and hitting it towards a particular target area, that the most efficient way will feel and look easier than any other way. And when someone learns to do that initially, it can be a bit robotic. But once they've gone through the process of grooving and grooving and grooving and grooving like a robot, then over time, suddenly, that player will start to look more natural than anybody else. I mean, if you feed a robot the right information, it's going to be a very efficient robot, a good tool. But if you feed a robot the wrong information, it's going to look poor, and people are going to think, well, that is too robotic. Da, 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 da. Do you know what I mean? You've got to, if the good information given to the robot is the perfect scenario. Poor information given to the robot, absolute nightmare.
Okay, so now it's time for a lucky listener to win a online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And so, Berners, you've got a couple of questions from our mailbag this week that that should provide us some points to discuss. And at the end of it, we'll choose a winner of an online coaching course. So what have you got there?
Okay, we've got a question here that's come through on Twitter. Of course, you can find us on Twitter at PV Cricket Coach. This question's come in from Donu, and it's regarding the hand speed of his bowling arm and if this is helpful in making the ball go faster.
Well, it certainly is. It's pretty much a simple law of physics that the faster your arm moves, the faster your hand moves, the faster the ball's going to come out of it. That's just the law of physics. Every action has an equal and opposite reaction, right? You know, you get the energy from your arm and you put it into the ball. But you've got to be careful when you say that, because although that is technically true, the bowling action is about a lot more than how fast your hand is moving. Because if you just have a lot of arm speed, then you could be losing speed in another part of your body, because it all starts with your run-up, of course, and then the bowling action, your jump to the crease, how you land, what your front foot is doing, how your energy transfers through your leg, through your hips, up through your core and lower back, through your shoulders, into your arm, into your hand and into the ball. All that is a kinetic chain, a series of power blasts, if you like, if you want to paraphrase Ian Pont. You've got to blast everything from the start of your run into releasing that ball. Your chest as well is important in this. Your chest needs to be driven forward like a sprinter coming out of the blocks, or if you imagine the batsman is holding a rope and the other end of the rope is tied around your chest as you release the ball, he's almost yanking you towards him. That would be the feel of chest drive, and you're being pulled towards him. So yes, the short answer is hand speed is very important, but don't think that is the secret. There isn't really a secret. It's a combination of a well-coordinated athletic body that puts as much speed as possible into the ball. And the better and more efficient your action is at putting speed into your arm and into your hand, the faster the ball's going to come out. We've all seen people with a quick arm, but not much in terms of hip drive. They saunter up to the crease and they don't look like they've got much, and then the arm comes over very quickly. You must have seen that when you're playing, Berners.
Yeah, absolutely.
It can be quite deceptive in a lot of ways, can't it? Because, you know, you think this guy's going to be a little dibbly-dobbly medium pacer, and he strolls up to the wicket and fires one past your nose.
Yeah, I think you often find it the case with an old veteran who ambles up to the crease, but he obviously used to be dynamite back in the day, and he's still got it a little bit, and he gives it a little bit more revs than what you think, and it's suddenly on you, and you're suddenly heading back towards the shed before you can say boo diddly squat.
Yeah, exactly. And if we're talking about someone who may be at the later end of their career and they want to conserve energy, you can understand that. But in terms of a young fast bowler, someone who wants to get every single yard of pace out of his body, it's really important not to think about the specifics of arm speed or anything like that. You have to think about the bowling action as a complete thing, from literally from your big toe to the tips of your fingers. You have to use your whole body, and you have to use your whole body in the right way. So it's okay for somebody who's a bit older, but I would always offer a word of caution for these type of questions. In why do you want to know that? Are you going to then go away and work on arm speed as much as you can and forget about the rest of your bowling action? If that's the case, don't do that. Work on your whole action rather than one specific element of it.
It's all or nothing. That's what you're saying.
That's what I'm saying. What's next, Berners?
Okay, I've got a question here from David. Now, David fell out of love with the game back in 2007, dropped from his county junior side, so he's obviously got a bit about him. Left languishing at the top of the club's third team. Bottom of the second team averages with both bat and ball. However, this year, he's really been given a good chance to get back into it. And on the batting side of things, He was just wondering if we could suggest a couple of drills he could do on picking up the actual length of the ball and making a decision as to whether to go backwards or forwards. And also, moving on from that, how to keep the scoreboard ticking. So if he's in a bit of a rut, there's a steady bowler that's come on. How does he manage to manipulate that and keep his score and his team ticking?
Okay, yeah, so a couple of questions there. The first one is an interesting one. How do I learn to pick up length and move forward or back on my own? Well, you can't really. The only way you're going to learn that is to face bowlers. It doesn't even work really with facing a bowling machine, because the key to picking up length early is picking up the clues from the bowler's bowling action. It's tiny little things, subconscious almost, that you spot in the bowler as he runs up and as he gathers up to the crease, that makes you realise what's going on. Even up to the point of the ball is being released, you can just see slightly that, you know, you can almost make out when the ball is being released slightly later or slightly earlier. If it's being released slightly later, then it's going to be fuller. If it's being released, if it's later, it's going to be shorter. If it's earlier, it's going to be fuller. So you've got to you can't really teach that. You know, I could say that to somebody and they, okay, I'll watch out for that, but they're not going to get it unless they go and face lots and lots of bowling. So you know, maybe the answer is to play as much cricket as you can. Get, you know, go and play midweek cricket, go and play Sunday cricket, go and play as much cricket as you can against all standards of bowling. It doesn't have to be good standards of players. I've played some shocking midweek games, but it all helps, because it helps you get an idea of what the bowler is trying to do, what the bowler looks like when he's bowling a short ball, what the bowler looks like when he's bowling a fuller ball. There is no real shortcut to that. You just have to do it as much as you can. Do you know what I mean, Berners? You just kind of get a feel. You almost get a feel whether the ball's going to be full or short.
Yeah, definitely. It's just user experience, I guess. So, and also muscle memory and movement. You just naturally have an instinct which your brain picks up the ball at a certain length, and then your feet naturally move. It shouldn't be too much of a decision process, because if you're thinking too much during that time, I guess you're going to get out, or you're going to make a false decision and make an error. So it definitely comes down to your natural ability to pick that up and your mindset of seeing that delivery.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So it is really all about facing as much bowling as you can. And that can be frustrating, especially if you're only playing one game a week. So, you know, get in the nets, round up, you know, maybe round up some mates and go to the local park and have a bit of a pickup game with a tennis ball. It's funny, but even stuff like that really helps. So, you know, as long as they're bowling properly, then you can you can learn even when you're messing around. The other question about rotating the strike, that's also a tough one, because, again, it's something that you really need to practice. You can actually practice this if you can set up a middle practice with your club, which I know with a lot of clubs can be a bit difficult. If you suggest anything that isn't nets to a lot of clubs, then they'll look at you out the corner of their eye, like you've suggested that we all start playing cricket in pink tutus. But if you can get some middle practice, then you can practice rotating the strike. Because the problem with batting in nets is it's very easy to get into that net mentality of, well, I've hit the ball, therefore it must have gone for four, and that isn't necessarily the case. So, you know, teams do miss out. You miss out on judging a run. You miss out on those important aspects, like you look at the fielder and you notice that he's right-handed. And when you hit it to his left, he's just a little bit on his heels. And you know for sure, with 100% certainty, that he will never get round to that ball, because A, he's on his heels, and B, he has to run around it to get onto his right hand, because he's got nothing on his left. So that's an easy single. Now, a lot of batsmen will miss that just purely because they're not really thinking about it. So, yeah, you keep an eye on the fielders. Try and work out where the gaps are, and sometimes the gaps can be in places where you don't think they are. Just because there's a gap between two fielders, that's an obvious gap. But sometimes there's a gap when you drop the ball down at your feet and run. Sometimes there's a gap behind the fielder if you can hit it over him. So work out where the gaps are and work out who the strong fielders are and what their hand is. And you sort of make a mental note of that as you go along. Look at the. It's quite easy in club cricket because you always get the guy who stands a little bit deep and wanders out of position. There's always one of those. He's usually at mid on. So keep an eye out for him. You know there's one to him every time. There's normally a guy who's a bit slow off the mark. Maybe he's a bit overweight. You know, maybe he's just not really paying attention. You always get one of those as well. So you can pick out those guys. You're not necessarily deliberately trying to hit it to them. But if you do hit it in their direction, you know you're more likely to make it when you hit it, even if you don't quite middle it. So pay attention to those things. Always be thinking, even when you defend the ball, instead of defending the ball and thinking, great, I've survived, or what an excellent defensive shot that was, which you'd be surprised how many club batsmen do that. You play a defensive shot and then you immediately look up to see if there's a run. Now, you might not go for it. But if you're looking up and the non-striker's aware, then, especially if it hits you on the pad, there's a fairly good chance you can get a single unless they've got a short leg in or the keeper's standing up. So pay attention to things like that and you will be able to rotate the strike. And then there are things like slightly opening the face or moving across your stumps to work the ball into the leg side. But you don't really, at club third 11, club second 11, you don't really need to worry about stuff like that. All you need to do is play in an orthodox way, be aware of the fielders, be sure you know what your strong shots are, and don't think, well, I'm either hitting a four or I'm not, there's no way I'm going to do anything else, which a lot of club batsmen do. What's your style, Berners? Are you a tip and run type guy or are you boundary or nothing?
Being a cat cander, a lefty, I was brought up with the fact that I need to rotate the strike because obviously you can get into a lot of weaknesses of bowlers' line and length as well, mixing that up. So I'm a bit of a nerdler. Yeah, you always have a good understanding with the guy at the other end as well, because you can have a plan that you say, look, I'm going to hit it here. We both run, because if you hit it there, I'm cool, and he's not quite in the same frame of mind as yourself, then you're in trouble as well. So having good communication, having a bit of a plan, like I'm going to look to score against that fielder or in that gap, and knowing your field is probably the most critical element. And yeah, I always look to rotate the strike, and I think getting bat on ball is really essential as well, not trying to go for those big shots all the time, trying to look for boundaries. Just get the bat on the ball, make the fielders work, and turn the pressure onto them rather than the pressure being on you. So if you're always hitting the ball to them, at least you can look for errors and mistakes. And like you say, guys out of position, there's always a weak link. There's always a couple of weak links.
Especially in club cricket, you know, you often find yourself in the middle of an innings and they've got a ring field and you're thinking, right, hang on a minute, where am I going to score? Because they've cut off all my shots almost. And if you haven't perhaps got your eye quite in and you can't hit it through the gaps yet, then there's nothing wrong with a gentle tap. It's very hard for, you know, say mid-wicket to steam in and hit the stumps if both batsmen call strongly and both go for it quickly. And as you say, Berners, that does take a bit of understanding, and that's why middle practice comes in handy. So you can bat in partnership with the guy at the other end. But even if you can't do that middle practice, you know, you can still, at the end of every over, go and talk about the fielders and say, oh, I've noticed that guy standing at square leg looks like he's a bit of a ringer. Let's see if we can get a run to him the next time I accidentally squirt one through my legs in that direction. And then you know, even if you're not the world's greatest batsman and you're not Jonathan Trott and you can't work the ball around in the way that he can, then you can still pick up a lot of runs. I see it every week in the level that I play, a lot of runs missed purely because the batsmen aren't looking for it. So, in summary, do middle practice where you can, learn how to rotate the strike, learn how to run, learn how to turn. That's really important. A lot of batsmen don't know how to run in a straight line and then turn and go back the other way.
Good calling, good backing up.
Yeah, learn how to call and back up and keep talking to the other guy and keep watching the fielders and spot the weak links. That's the end of the show this week. If you're listening to this on the day that it comes out, then we'll all be in Durham for the latest Pitch Vision Academy live event. So wish us luck for that event. We'll have Pitch Vision on show, and we'll be having some talented youngsters working on that, and keep an eye out for the video that's going to come out for that. If you're listening to it any other time, thanks very much for downloading the show, and we'll be back next week with some more interviews and questions. If you want your question answered and a chance to win a competition, you can get in touch with us. You've got the details there, Berners.
Yes, I have. You can give us a call on 02088 167 691, or drop us an email at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. And of course, we've got that Twitter account, as mentioned, which is at PV Cricket Coach.
So, Berners, we've just got one thing to do before we leave everybody, and that is decide on a winner for the coaching course online with Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So, which question did you prefer this week? Who's going to get the free course?
I think we'll go with Jack. I liked his question about keeping the scoreboard ticking, very relevant this time of the year as people start to prepare for the new season, and also his reinvigoration for the game of cricket. Good on you, Jack.
Yeah, exactly. We always love a bit of passion at Pitch Vision Academy. Welcome back. There's no escaping it now. You're in for the long haul. And that's the end of the show. Thanks for listening, and we'll speak to you next week.